Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, State Senator Scott Hammond joins us for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Hello, is this D&D Roofing?
Yes, it is. How may I help you?
You did such a great job on my roof. May I speak to the owner?
I am an owner.
Oh, can I speak to your supervisor?
Sure.
How may I help you?
I love your work. May I speak to the owner?
I am an owner. We're all owners. Well, that's why at D&D we work so hard to keep your home safe and sound.
Oh, no wonder.
D&D Roofing and Sheet Metal. Local, employee-owned, here for you.
Like a traditional handmade basket, retail is woven into the fabric of life in Nevada. From big box to mom and pop, retail supports our communities in countless ways. Jobs for the disabled, team uniforms for kids, help for the elderly, and so much more. Retail employs over 1 in 10 workers. Retail supports Nevada, and we support retail.
RANNV.org.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back to the program State Senator Scott Hammond of District 18. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir. Couple of stories that have come out in the last couple of days. Story originally broken by Riley Snyder in the Nevada Independent. The headline says, Cannizzaro-led PAC gave Democratic Senate leader donation for maxed-out contributors. And the Review Journal this morning, as we're taping this, the headline from Rory Appleton is, Nevada GOP complaint says Cannizzaro broke fundraising laws. And the reason that I want to ask you about this is part of this money went to Lita Cannizzaro herself, but also to Christy Watson, who's running against you in District 18. So your response to all of this?
Well, first of all, I checked with my, the person who does my books, and just to make sure that that what was being said was correct. And I was told that yes, these are our allegations. The allegations hold water. That this is probably this is improper, and I would never do that either. As to Christy Watson, they did a retraction and they updated that. That is not actually the opponent I have drawn in the fall general election. They had to update that so that people knew my candidate is not Christy Watson. She's running against Carrie Buck. On the other side of the Las Vegas Valley here, so it's disheartening to see that they didn't take the time to look to make sure that they were within compliance. And I know that furthermore, it's even more disheartening to find out that those who work for leader or majority leader Cannizzaro are still claiming that they've done nothing wrong. And not only did they do nothing wrong, but those of you who report it are actually inappropriately doing so. And it's, they're taking umbrage to the fact that it's being reported. That's, again, I think that's a misstep on their part to not only, they acknowledge that this was done, but they think it was all done legitimately. And those of you out there reporting it, you shouldn't do that because it casts them in a bad light. So that's my take on that.
All right. So in probably the most famous case in recent history, in Nevada history anyway, was a situation where Senator Harry Reid received $100,000 in this type of donation. He said, yes, I asked for the money to be raised, but I didn't ask for it to be raised illegally. He donated all that money to charity, and the person who donated the money ended up going to jail. What do you think the situation should be regarding this and in response to the GOP complaint?
Well, again, I think that the people, we have to make sure that we're above board, not just for ourselves, but for the people of Nevada, right? We have to do that. And I think that they take, I think it lowers the bar, and it tells people in the state of Nevada, if we just, you know, give back the money, if we just donate the money and everything is swept under the rug, that there's nothing there to see, let's move on. And I think that's wrong, because I think people expect a little bit more from us. And I hope that, you know, for either, you know, Republicans or Democrats or whoever is receiving dollars, I mean, if you're a candidate running or you're a current office holder, you have to make sure that you understand those rules, which is why in today's society, it's really important that we actually hire somebody who understands those laws and obeys those laws, because people have to have that confidence that their lawmakers and their candidates are also obeying the laws. And so I just think it's a disservice to all those of us who are out there who are trying to make sure we understand and follow and comply with all those regulations and all those laws that have been put in place, so that people know where money is and that we're not inappropriately handling it or funneling it to wherever we might have. And in her case, back to her main campaign account.
All right, so let me ask you this. What should be done with the money that has been received by these candidates, because they are not breaking the law in initially accepting that? It's what they do with that money that is the question here. So it's the giving of the money that is the questionable. So what do you think then should be done with the money? Should it not be given to charity? Should it not be returned to the donors? Where should it go?
Well, first of all, I think you need to talk to the donors. I mean, they're the ones who gave you the money. And second of all, depending on how you got it, charity is not a bad thing. But, you know, when you talk about money given to a PAC and then funneled back into her campaign, I don't think that that's actually appropriate either. There's some improprieties there. And I think that candidates, they do have to have some consequences for those who do it. So that's I think that needs to be handled by, well, I think the Secretary of State is the one who received the complaint, and I think that she will, that would be Barbara Sagaski. Secretary Sagaski is going to have to figure out what to do with that.
All right. While we're on the topic of Secretary Sagaski, one of the big controversies that's blowing up across the country is how we're going to be voting in November. Secretary Sagaski has said that it's going to be in-person voting. Democrats across the country are pushing it to be mail-in voting. What's your position on this?
My position is we always have had mail-in voting. You know, absentee voting is available. All you have to do is apply for it. You can get it. You can mail in. If you're worried about showing up at a polling place, you can already take that avenue. It's already there for you. In-person balloting, there are a lot of people who still want to do this. You can do it safely. If you need to put more money towards that, we do have CARES Act money that's still available. They can actually put more money into that to make sure that we have more polling places, I suppose. But making sure that people, if they want to go in, have an opportunity to go in person. I just don't think that we need to change much.
My only concern about that is that it always seems to me that the majority of poll workers have been retired senior citizens who have volunteered to do this, and they are an at-risk portion of the population. Do you have any concerns about that?
Well, absolutely. I have concerns about people, and rightfully so, that there's a large segment that, you know, this virus actually attacks. And of course, if they take care of themselves and they isolate themselves, they're not available to be volunteers. But we have shut down the schools down here in Clark County. There are a lot of different schools that we could use as polling places, and there are probably a lot of younger volunteers that come out. And again, if we give some of that money to the Secretary of State, that they can then use to attract more poll workers and maybe a younger generation, maybe a lot of teachers who have a little bit more time, then they could probably attract those people and get enough volunteers that aren't in that category. And again, I think there are a lot of seniors out there who still would like to do that. And I want to make sure that they have that option to do that, to work those polls.
Another question that has come up in the last 24 hours as we're taping this is that the governor has relaxed the spacing requirement for some of the schools and gone from a 6-yard requirement to a 3-yard requirement. What's your thoughts on that? Not so much for the kids, but for the teachers, because obviously teachers' unions across the country are very concerned about their teachers and the potential for spreading the virus, not to and from the kids, but from the teachers to their families, to perhaps their parents, and raising concerns there.
Well, first of all, Sam, it's a great question because, you know, for many months now, we've been hearing that we're going to be following the science on this. The CDC released their report a while ago talking about how safe it is for younger students to go back to school, actually talking about the 3-foot requirement as opposed to the 6-foot requirement, and then talking about how safe it is. Now, in our right before we left that special session a week or so ago, the Republicans released a statement talking about what our priorities were for the money that we saw as funds were looked at again, funding categories were looked at again. One of the statements that we made was that we believe that we didn't put it in our spreadsheet, but one of the things that we were looking at is some of the CARES Act money that's still available, has not been dispersed, has not been categorized yet. We could have used some of that and still could use some of that to give hazard pay, as it were, to teachers who said, yes, I'll come out, I'll show up at schools, I'll be in the classroom. We recognize that it is definitely something that they have to weigh, you know, personally. Do I want to go back to work? Do I not? And so we thought it was appropriate to offer them more money if they're going to go back into the classroom and be around those young students. But the CDC has made it very clear that this is not, you know, the students are not going to be passing it back. They're least likely, I should say, in our society, the least likely in our society to be affected, ill affected by this virus, and the least likely to spread it around. And so my wife is a school teacher still. She was ready to go back in the classroom. She was looking forward to a school year where she was in front of the students talking, even if she had to have a mask on. She knew that, she knows the risk, but she was also willing to go in there because she believes that's how her students best learn. So we did try to take steps to mitigate this. But, you know, in the end, teachers would have their ability, according to our plan, their ability to go back in the classroom and receive a little bit more money.
Have you talked to State Senator Keith Picard since the session?
Yeah, we've talked.
And what? How did the conversation go? If you can share that with us.
Sure, it went really well. I know a lot of people were asking about that particular question. We went into that. Just kind of set the table for those of you who are watching. At the beginning of this special session that we just finished, we were tasked with looking at the budget deficit. How do we approach it? Where do we, what cuts do we accept? We got there on a Wednesday, I believe, and we started the Thursday afterwards. We were finally given the numbers. The governor said, here's where we believe that we can increase our revenue. He gave us all the additional sources of funds, and then the cuts. We, in good faith, went to work with our Democratic colleagues. I know that in our press release, Senator Gansert mentioned the fact that she and Senator Keekeffer went to work right away. These are, two of the people in our caucus who know the budget inside and out. And they started looking at those funding sources. We quickly discovered that there was a lot more money than originally thought. And so when we budgeted for our priorities, the first thing we did was we wanted to put more money into education, into healthcare, because we knew we could draw down more federal dollars. And we also wanted to make sure that we weren't affecting any more than we had to the least vulnerable, or the most vulnerable in our community. And so that's what we did. We sat down and we did all this. We presented our priorities, how we would put the add backs back in. And we really did make sure that HHS, Health and Human Services, we put more money back into Medicaid, and we put more money into education. That's not so with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle. They preferred to look at state employees and try to figure out how to get rid of those furlough days that were suggested by the governor, 12 of them to be exact, over a year, one a month. And so the priorities were a little bit different. So in the end, what the Democrats decided to do was bring a tax that even Governor Sisolak said was probably ill-advised, that probably best left until we got back in February in a regular session to be able to vet that tax, be able to talk about and have everybody at the table talking about unintended consequences. That arbitrary number of 60% is the thing that keeps coming back in my mind. So when Senator Picker gave his statement on the floor of the Senate, he mentioned first and foremost the process, the arbitrariness of the number that was brought out, the 60%. And I think one other item before he started talking about making sure that money went directly to education. The next day, which was, I think, a Friday, there was a day that we did not go into session, so we had a day off. I believe that Senator Pickard actually made a few phone calls and was inquiring why we didn't put that money in a sort of a lockbox, if you will, to make sure that it went to education. Some of the Democrats on the other side of the aisle said, we can work with you on that. And they did. They worked. They talked about how we could isolate it to make sure that the money that was generated by the tax, the $50 million, would it was categorized and then put it in a grant form to make sure it went to education, which is all fine and good. But in the end, it still did not satisfy the other parts of that. And that is, you didn't have everybody at the table. It was still done in a rapid fashion, a very quick fashion during special session. Hardly anybody was there to give testimony. We had testimony at 2 o'clock in the morning. We started that particular hearing at 11:30 at night, receiving some people testified at 2 o'clock in the morning and then took a vote. That's not the way you do tax policy. It's not clean. And Senator Pickard, he came to that conclusion and told everybody, I just can't vote for this right now. We need to talk about this in the regular session. So it wasn't contentious. It was just somebody who arrived back at his original conclusion, and that was that this was sort of rushed and that we needed to look at the process a little bit better and then include more people in it.
Okay, so nobody in your caucus is looking at Picard as somebody who is potentially the weak link to give the Democrats the supermajority they need in both houses?
Absolutely not. No, what we saw is somebody who looked through it. I mean, here's somebody who really thought, I really want to make sure that we give money. If we're going to raise money, we're going to make sure it gets to students. He looked through it. He talked with them. They came up with a plan. It still didn't satisfy everything that he was concerned about and moved on. So, no, I don't think that nobody in our caucus looks at him as the weak link. He just looks at we look at him as somebody who's thoughtful and went through the process.
All right, let's take a break. More with State Senator Scott Hammond after this timeout.
As you know, Reno is booming. Tolls Development Company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Tolls Development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Because of UMC, I'm putting my free time to good use.
Because of UMC, she keeps me on my toes.
Because of UMC and this guy, I'm here.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Scott Hammond of District 18. So we have another special session coming up here. You're just about to head back to Carson City as we're taping this. And some of the topics that we're looking at are criminal and social justice policy reform. Is this just a blatantly political thing to have a special session that is the lead topic on, where everybody's going to be meeting in Carson City in February? Why are we having a special session that deals with that specifically now?
That's a great question, to be honest with you. When I've been in the legislature now for a number of years, I've had the opportunity to be a part of several special sessions, and every time we had a special session, there was an emergency, there was a need, and you had to get it done, and you had to be very focused, laser focused. You wanted to be in there and out of there in a day or two, three at the most. And so you wanted to make sure that this was something that had to be dealt with. You know, back in, I want to say, May, I finally got a phone call from the governor, and we talked about a special session, you know, the potential for that special session. And he and I talked, and he basically said, look, there's only two things I really want to accomplish in a special session. This is the governor telling me that there's only two things that he wanted to accomplish. One, he wanted to make sure that we filled the holes created by the shutdowns that he had ordered. So we knew that we had a budget deficit, so we wanted to go in there and fix those. And then number two, we needed to come up with a definition for liability. So businesses in schools could reopen again and not have to worry about fear of any, you know, litigation that might come their way, as long as they were compliant and making sure that they were addressing all the rules and regulations and all the suggestions coming out of his office. So those are the two things. Now, all of a sudden, we're going back up there, and we have a whole litany of things. And that's very, for me, it's very disconcerting, because I think that these are all things, these are policy issues. And policy issues, you need time to make sure you get it right. You don't want to put something out there that is sort of a knee-jerk reaction. Not to say that there isn't some stuff in those categories, especially as you mentioned, the the criminal justice reforms. There are certainly some things that we can do, but for the most part, those are things that can wait until February, when you have time to go through those policies, where you have people come in and testify for and against, and you actually have a chance to make sure that you're not getting anything wrong. That's why it's important to do it probably in a February session. So we're going to be looking at a lot of different policy issues that, for me, you know, if they're not taking care of the immediate needs, the emergencies that we're in, the emergency that we happen to be in, I think that we might be doing something that it shouldn't be done right now. Obviously, the liability issue is paramount to me. I think it's important. In that last special session we had, when we actually had the superintendent of school of Clark County on the record, we asked him, how important is it to have that liability definition? Was it important enough before they opened up? And he said, absolutely, they needed it. We walked away from the special session, didn't have it. That, to me, is the only reason we should be going up there right now, is to fix that.
All right, let's take one more break. We'll be right back with State Senator Scott Hammond after this timeout.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Come visit Design Outdoor's store and backyard to see our wide selection of fire pits, barbecues, and pizza ovens, natural stone water features and fountains, and frostproof pottery. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
One of the most psychologically damaging things parents can do to children in divorce is disparage one another, which is why I can't believe I even have to make this commercial. Half of your kids' genetics come from this person you're spewing hate about. Your children have the right to love you both. But more than that, they deserve to love themselves.
Marilyn York might be a men's rights divorce attorney, but this is for every selfish parent. Shut up.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Scott Hammond, Republican of District 18. You know, one thing about these special sessions, you know, the one we just saw, 12 days, potentially we're looking at another long-ish session. This costs a lot of money at a time when the state has no money. What are we doing?
Well, for those of you following along, you probably already know, but for those who don't know, the last special session we had, which was 12 days, unprecedented. I've never been involved in a special session that lasted 12 days. We're in the building many hours, long hours. So I got my peanut butter, I got my jelly, I got my loaf of bread on my refrigerator in my office just to eat the snack. But after 12 days, it gets a little long. The previous session was paid for, or will be paid for at some point, by CARES Act money, because if it wasn't for the virus, we would probably not need to be there because we wouldn't have this budget deficit. I don't know how the next one will be paid for. I don't know if it's coming out of state coffers, because again, the only thing that we're dealing with probably that's potentially related to COVID would be the election reforms that they're talking about. And of course, the definition of liability, maybe to a certain extent, Dieter. I still think that the governor has, Dieter is a part of the governor's agency. We've been told that we will have a bill on Dieter. To me, I don't think that there's anything. I mean, I think the governor could probably do all he needs to with Dieter without having to have additional legislation in that area. But we'll see. We haven't seen anything come out of his office yet.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
And that's sadly where we've got to end this. I look forward to having you back as soon as the special session is over. Let's get you back on and we'll get your thoughts, all right?
Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being here always. Appreciate it. State Senator Scott Hammond, and we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com. As you know, Reno is booming. Toll's development company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Toll's development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Safety. We all think about it. You think about it when he buckles in, when you check your mirrors and put away your phone. RTC thinks about safety too. In fact, we create it. Center turn lanes mean fewer blind spots. Bike lanes keep cyclists and you safe. Roundabouts reduce injury collisions. And all these crosswalks are designed to keep families like yours safe. Safety is your priority, and it's ours too. Every day, in everything we do.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
You can now watch Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for Nevada Newsmakers and become a subscriber. We'll see you on the next broadcast. Thanks for watching and listening.